Nate Langson here, editor of Wired.co.uk and normally host of the Wired.co.uk podcast, except this is a bit of a special bonus episode from Mobile World Congress in Barcelona, where I am right now, because earlier on in the feed, you may have noticed we had an excerpt from an interview I did with Firefox VP Jonathan Nightingale about the Firefox £15, $25 phone. We also did a feature on the website from that same interview about what Mozilla's trying to do with its super budget phone for developing markets. So for those of you keen to hear more about Mozilla's plan with this phone, this is my interview with Jonathan in full from the show floor of Mobile World Congress. And I started by asking him exactly what it is that Mozilla is trying to achieve with this extremely low-cost product.
You need to start from the beginning, which is that Mozilla is not like other companies, right? That we're a non-profit. Our job is to make the web a better place. 10 years ago, the right way to do that was to build a Firefox browser for desktops. And that's all well and good, but when we were looking at the state of the mobile market, we said, well, there's an opportunity here, right? That billions of people are coming online. You hear it everywhere right now. Everybody's talking about, oh, the flood of people coming online. They're not going to do it with an $800 smartphone. And so when we look at that space and we say, is there a place for Mozilla there? What can we do to bring the web to more people? That's when the idea of building an OS stopped being something we laughed off the table, started to be something we took seriously. And consistently in 2013 and this year, our focus is there. Our focus is on these markets that are just emerging, that are very price sensitive, where people are actually coming into contact with the internet for the very first time. And that's why something like a $25 smartphone is so compelling, because finding a partner like Spreadtrum who can build it, bringing it out to market, you're going to empower a generation of people who otherwise they don't have another good option.
So that's the thing. I mean, building the OS is one thing, but also making a $25 smartphone a viable commercial proposition seems to be entirely another. I mean, how do you even go about putting together, how do you go about advising a company how to put together a phone with what is presumably such a low margin?
We've got advantages that make that more possible, right? Part of being a nonprofit means that we don't have the same monetization pressure that other people do. When we're taking that platform to a manufacturer and saying, you know, now here's where we need a share of it and here's how that needs to look, we can just do different things there, right? We've got different flexibility. But on top of that, we've got this unique advantage that the web is a much nicer technology platform for delivering that kind of thing, right? I think if Google were building Android today, it would have gone very differently.
How do you think that would have gone?
I don't think they would have chosen a Dalvik VM layer in the middle of it, right? I think that it's pretty memory intensive to have a big Java VM eating up space in there. And that means that they need more expensive chips, they need more RAM, right? They need a bunch of things that's going to drive the bill of materials up and put a $25 smartphone out of reach, right? You can tour around here and find Android phones that are selling for $70. That's great. I like that they're making it more affordable. They're also pretty clunky, right? Like that's really pushing the platform down. Whereas the web started low, right? It started on, I mean, my first web browser equipped PC was probably 33 megahertz, probably running like 32 meg of RAM, like a fraction of what you find even in a $25 smartphone today.
So the company that you're working with is Spreadtrum Communications, who I hadn't heard of. They're a Chinese company, from what I understand. What's their background and how did this deal come about and why these guys?
Well, and so to be clear, Spreadtrum is building the chip that's going to drive the phone. Obviously, various OEMs can consume that chip and package things in, right? And the OEMs may be ones you've heard of or not. But one of the things we've focused on with OS is to not be specific to a given partner, either on manufacturing, on distribution, on operators. Right, the whole idea of the platform is that it's capital O open, right? That not only is the source available, it's not published after the fact, it's not available, but if you really want it, you're going to have to sign an agreement with us. Take it and go. If you want to put our marks on it, we're going to want to have a conversation with you about the quality of manufacture and things like that. Many times we've been surprised to have people contact us and say, hey, we took your code off the public repositories, we put it in a TV, do you want to see what that looks like? Many times the partnership opportunities come as much from their curiosity and read on the market as they do from us going out and driving that.
So let's talk about the phone itself. You developed a concept. Is it called Flame?
Yep. The Flame is our reference phone.
The reference phone. Okay. Now, that's not the same as the $25 phone, but you have developed a concept phone that is effectively a $25 phone. Is that
that's,
right?
That's right. The phone you'll see is not actually the phone that would ship. That's, you know, the Spreadtrum chips inside of a commodity box, right? Obviously, each manufacturer is going to make their own choice about screen and everything. But to get to a $25 price point, we can say, this is what it would look like. This is a phone that somebody could manufacture and sell at this kind of price.
And where are those costs saved? I mean, $25 is no money, really, for a phone, right?
It's alarmingly cheap, for sure.
So what, if you had to pick sort of the three primary drivers that help break that cost down to $25, what would they be?
Part of it is just knowing that there's a market appetite there, and that market appetite doesn't need a 6-inch screen, right? That we can, when you hold the device, you'll see, right? It's a 3.5-inch screen. And that's okay, because you're talking to people who, if they have any cellular device at all, it's a feature phone. So bringing them a web-powered, apps-enabled, marketplace, Firefox phone for that kind of price point is a place where they can negotiate around things like, does it have a 3.5-inch screen? But another big one, honestly, is that it just takes less memory, right? That we can, there's phones being announced here with multiple gigabytes of RAM. That's huge and expensive, and it's gotta be high performance, right? And that's what you need if you wanna attack the high end. But the Spreadtrum device out there has got 256 of ROM for the OS and 128 meg of RAM for the smartphone. That's unheard of, right? We're pushing, you see Google pushing very hard to get Android down to 256.
Is there a risk that causes, in a way, unofficial fragmentation in terms of supporting services on the phone? I mean, 128 meg of RAM is not a lot compared to some of the devices that do run Firefox OS that have a lot more. How do you manage the fact that this phone may appear, you know, sluggish, if you like, or has the risk of appearing sluggish?
Yeah, I think that's actually a greater risk for some of the proprietary stacks than it is for us. So I know that one of the challenges that Android's going to face going down to 256 is that many of the app authors didn't think that was ever going to happen, right? They didn't build with that assumption in mind. And so to find that, oh, now there are these devices in market that are below the minimum specs that they thought they were targeting, maybe the app performs very poorly, maybe they've got to pull it out of the store in certain markets, that's a challenge, right? For us, the web has a long history of having to scale up and down based on your device, right? Before anybody was talking about Firefox OS, people had browsers on their iOS devices or their Android devices that were maybe capable and maybe weren't. And if you wanted to address those people, even in the first world, you needed a website that was adaptive. You needed to be able to sort of detect the abilities and recognize what you were rendering to. So the web's just got a lot more of that experience built in, and so does the developer community. They've had to solve that problem already.
The headlines here tend to form around the idea of a $25 phone, but is there room for a $20 phone? Is that doable? Could you have a $30 phone that had $5 of extra value that just sort of, for the people that can just about afford that, find that to be an attractive step up? Like, Is that a feasible thing to think about?
It's not what we're talking about this week, but like, you walk around and talk to the OEMs, right? They'll tell you, okay, so if I have this chip, I still have 14 other dials I can control. How big's the battery, right? How big's the screen and how high resolution is it? How much RAM do I want to put in it? And each of those things is going to move the bill of materials up or down. They've got a great deal of flexibility there. What they haven't had historically is the ability to go this low in the first place, right? So getting down to that price point, that's big news. But obviously, if someone wants to push something higher market, at our press event on Sunday, we had Alcatel OneTouch there. They had several new Firefox OS devices that they were launching, including one that's basically a mid-market smartphone, right? It's stylish, it's got a larger screen, it's got more memory, right? And they're basically, you know, we've been really crisp that we want to target that emerging market segment this year. We're not taking our eye off of that. But the platform's open, and they see that the web scales up. So when we're talking about a $25 smartphone, if you put Firefox OS on a high-end phone, if you put it on a tablet, if you put it on a smart television, right, it scales up very well because, again, you look at the history of the web, it started on these very mediocre PCs, and at home I've got a quad core 16 gig machine, right? And still most of the work I do on it is web-based, right? Obviously when you get into that realm of computing power, things like full 3D gaming in the browser become possible, right? That's going to be hard on a $25 smartphone. But even still, if you go out there, you'll see people demoing Where's My Water, Cut the Rope, like sort of big marquee games ported to run on web tech and running just fine on these phones.
So what sort of applications and usages would people be able to take advantage of on this $25 phone as it exists today in this concept form that you're showing off? What sort of things can people expect to do, and what sort of markets are you aiming to have people adopt these phones in?
So the promise of the $25 smartphone, there's a lot of people who want to say, hey, you know, like, smartphone-like, you know, at 30 euro or 50 euro, right? There's a bunch of people here showing off things that they're aiming at that price point. We want to get there without compromises. Yes, it's a small device. Yes, it's sort of low on memory. But you're looking at a full-featured smartphone. You're going to get full access to the web. You've got the Mozilla Marketplace. But again, because our strategy isn't about locking people in, you can also go find web apps wherever they are and install them on the device. You can also see we've got this dynamic app search built in, which is something that a native OS has a lot of trouble with. On a native OS, you really have to download the app and install it. You need to make a sort of declarative decision that this is a thing that you want on your phone. The web doesn't work that way. We all read a web page and then discard it and move on to the next one. So one of the things you'll see is that you can do contextual app search and say, hey, I'm in Barcelona. I'm not typically in Barcelona, right? If I want to search for tapas, maybe I'm a Yelp user and I have Yelp on my phone all the time, but maybe I don't travel very much, so I don't have TripAdvisor, right? I can do a search for Barcelona, see the TripAdvisor hits for Barcelona, just like it were an app installed on my phone, but as soon as I'm done with it, I can move on. Or if I decide, wow, this is a really great experience, I want to keep it around, just long tap, add it to your home screen, that's it. There is no install. There's just sort of, are you using this app or aren't you, right? And that's not only a powerful feature, it's something that's really unique to a web-based platform.
You're targeting this at growth areas, much as we've seen similarly, I think, from Nokia X and what Nokia's trying to do there. What sort of areas in particular, what countries do you think will see this type of phone to begin with?
A lot of 2013, if you look at our launches, they were basically Latin America and Eastern Europe. In 2014, we haven't announced all the launch countries yet. There's some on the press kit already, but you're going to see more launches in Europe. But you're also going to see us start to talk more about Sub-Saharan Africa and Southeast Asia. These are markets with a lot of people coming online for the first time. There's a lot of price sensitivity, and that's a place that we should be. You know, focusing on price sensitivity also means our platform evolves in interesting ways. So this $25 phone, where clearly you're trying to, you know, find every way to economize, has dual SIM support. Because when we go and we talk to people in these markets, they're performing this sort of manual arbitrage over, you know, which cell phone provider they're using for what kind of content. And so dual SIM is really important in that market. Bringing them a cheap phone, but one where they can only use it with a single carrier, is a missed opportunity. So we made sure that dual SIM was baked in.
I've seen some talk about how triple SIM is becoming an important factor in, I think, in Latin America, actually.
When we did our user research in Brazil about a year ago, we saw some people buying off-market quad SIM, like not authorized or anything, just somebody built a quad SIM phone because there's an appetite for it, right?
Yeah. So who would you see is the primary competitor in this space right now for this type of device?
You know, it's funny, there's sort of two categories. There's a bunch of people saying very similar things, right? I hear very similar things from people like Tizen and Ubuntu, but I heard those things last year, and it's clear that they're having trouble getting a product out to market. So I can't really point to them as competition unless they're in market. I think looking at things like the Asha, which is sort of a half of a smartphone, it's in the same price range. I think it's probably targeting similar users. They have to figure out their content story, though. One of the advantages of the web is that the web's got a lot of content on it. There's a lot of apps on it, right? Anytime you're not building a purely web-based device, you need to answer the question of how you're going to get developers to build for you. And I think that's a challenge they have. Obviously, the things that Nokia is doing with an Android device, a sort of down-market Android device, that's interesting. I haven't seen an Android device at that kind of price point ever, and the ones I've seen that are aiming for the lowest price points tend to be sort of a poor experience. So that's, it's clear that they're going after a similar market. But again, we don't have to compete with them. We don't have to beat them. I would love to see that Android or the Google co-opts our model and says, yeah, we're going to allow web apps into the Google Play Store as first-class citizens. You're not going to have to do this phone gap, wrap it in our proprietary wrapper creature anymore, right? We're just gonna live what we preach about webbiness, and we're just gonna allow those web apps in. I think that'd be great, right? Our job is to make the web a better place and use that to make the world better. I would be perfectly happy to see other people getting on board.
To speak specifically about the UK, which has a very mature marketplace mm-hmm. for smartphones, particularly in the mid-range and in the high-end, is there a space for a product like this? Is there even a demand for something like a $25 smartphone? I mean, could it even be possible with taxes and imports and whatever being what they are?
That's a really good question. I think that we haven't looked at the $25 smartphone as a thing that we would bring into the UK, but then keep in mind, we don't launch phones, right? We build a platform, our operators launch phones. To the best of my knowledge, none of the partners that we've worked with have said, we really need to bring this into the UK market, right? Although there's certainly an appetite, I would expect, for the kind of user choice and webbiness that is built into Firefox OS in smartphones in the first world, right? One of our launches this year is in Germany, right? Which is hardly an underdeveloped economy.
For which product is that?
Oh, I'd have to go and dig it up.
For one of the Firefox OS products, though.
Exactly. And to point to that kind of thing, I mean, we're gonna see what the market reception is. Our focus is principally on emerging markets, and that was true in 2013. You're gonna see it in 2014 as well. But our operator partners can take it in a variety of ways, wherever they think there's gonna be appetite.
And there's nothing stopping somebody in the UK from buying one of the phones, maybe that launches in Germany, it'll be a GSM phone if it's out there, and putting their own local SIM in it and using it. That's not a barrier that exists.
Exactly, and you know, this reference device that you mentioned earlier, still very much under development, but we built this really for developers, not so much for end consumers. And it's, you know, quad band, and it's a perfectly acceptable phone to use, got a big screen, right? Like, the assumption is that developers are going to buy that to make it easier to develop their apps, and many of those people are in more developed economies.
I know we're running a little short on time now, but I just had a couple of extra questions, and one is just to find out, how long has this been in development, specifically with a $25 smartphone in mind? Like, how long has that been in process for?
Oh, the price tag is, you know, would have been a hard thing to pin down a couple years ago. Firefox OS started a little over 3 years ago now, three MWCs ago, so about 2.5 years ago. We were just looking at the state of the world. We build Firefox for Android, and we were looking at the memory pressures that we feel as an app on that platform. And a couple of the founders of the project sat down and looked at it and said, you know, we've gotten there. We've gotten to the point where the web can run a smartphone. There's five things it can't do. The web didn't know how to dial the phone 3 years ago, right? It didn't know how to send a text message. But those are just APIs. We can build those, and so we did. We had to find some partners to work with. We had great launch partners last year, and both operator and manufacturer. But the goal since the beginning there has been to push towards the pieces of the market that we can differentially attack, and that has been the affordable markets, right? So I don't think $25 has always been the focus, but certainly figuring out ways to use our technology advantage to push the web further out, that's always been part of the program.
Last question is, over the last few years in particular, Mozilla appears to be focusing much more heavily on products that aren't traditionally considered desktop.
Right.
Do you see Mozilla as being a primarily desktop or mobile company in future?
We're a web company, right? So the right thing for the web in 2003 was to build a desktop browser to unseat IE. When you had 95% homogeneity and a decommissioned browser team, the health of the web was at risk there, right? And so that's what the project formed around. And our success, keep in mind, we didn't have grand distribution partners on desktop. Our success came from building a product that users responded to, giving them choice in a place where they didn't think they had it, and them going around and telling their friends and family that this was a thing they should do, right? Now we've got hundreds of millions of people using desktop. But obviously, if you're going to point to a trend in the web over the last 5 years, it's been how much of it has moved into a mobile context. So it was important to us to be present there. Sometimes we can be more present than others, right? Firefox for Android is extremely successful on Android. 60 million downloads. It gets the highest week-over-week ratings in its category and stuff like that. We don't have a product on iOS because the rules of that store prohibit the kind of product we would want to ship. I'm confident I can get my icon into Firefox or into iOS, but I can't put Gecko there. I can't put our engine there. I can't even put our JavaScript engine there, right? That's really problematic in terms of creating real choice. So when we looked at that and said, well, if that's the entire state of the world, it's a little bit sad for the web. And it also is very sad for the next 2 billion people who aren't going to be able to play in this game. So that's where the idea came from. We're a web company. On any platform where that makes sense.
That was Jonathan Nightingale, VP of Firefox at Mozilla. And you can check out my full feature about the phone on wired.co.uk right now if you go to wired.co.uk/MWC. And don't miss our other full special episode from Mobile World Congress. That should be in the podcast feed now as well. And obviously, this week's regular episode is there too. I'll see you back in the studio next week for our regular programming.